Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I'm Zach.
And we are back. It's Wednesday when this episode comes out.
Halfway through the week already. Where has the time gone?
It is Wednesday, Muad'Dibs. Or Muad'Dudes.
Well, John, we had a little bit of a snafu yesterday.
We did. Well, it's all your fault because you went over the minute. So I think we need to, you know, correct all of this.
Can they hear my eyes rolling right now?
I don't know.
I hope that's audible.
The point is that this is a minute by minute podcast.
I know. You've said this. You've said it. We don't have to do it again.
You broke the holy tenet of minute by minute.
Whatever. We're here talking about minutes 67 through 68, every frame included in those minutes.
Of Dune Part 2.
Dune Part 2. So we get the laser gun goes off. So he notices the goon notices the obscured figure in the dust cloud.
In the not so far distance, because like we talked about, they have about 3 to 5 feet of visibility. Yeah. And this person looks like they're about 10 feet away. So let's just fucking open fire on him.
Exactly.
And instead, he just eviscerates one of his bros.
Yeah.
We got some goon on goon violence.
It's a clear case of friendly fire right here.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
And immediately, so the goon that got gunned down, he got gooned down. Black goon down.
I mean, yes, quite literally.
The goon that got gunned down had a buddy with him because, you know, buddy system. Gooners stick together.
Yep.
And his buddy kind of turns quickly as, you know, the one guy gets shot. And he's like, over comms, we don't get translation. But I'm almost certain the radio chatter at this point is like, bro, what the fuck did you just do, you piece of shit?
So that is a
there's a moment where the radio chatter is just like going crazy for a second, and then it just shuts up again.
Yeah. So that is a specific bullet point that I had. What the fuck, man, is probably what they're saying over the, over the radio. Or here's an alternative take on that. Maybe they don't know it's friendly fire.
Maybe.
Maybe they don't know. And they're thinking that the Fremen are actually making contact with them right now. So it could be that they're directing people to look in the direction that the shot came from, which is just directing them to look at themselves. You know,
the call comes from inside the house.
Exactly. Yep.
The buddy of the lasered goon, you know, we knew him
so briefly.
So briefly.
Yeah.
Because he immediately gets his legs swept out from under him and gets stabbed in the chest by a unknown Fedaiken.
Yeah. So
who then does the coolest like somersault escape,
dude. So a couple things about this sequence. I'm pretty sure that this slide tackle would be illegal in regulation play.
But we're not in regulation.
I know. I'm just saying like this looked like it came from behind and I did not see him make contact with the ball first. So I think this would be a yellow and or red card offense.
Okay. I'm going to argue with the ref on this one.
Oh yeah, naturally.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't get time to argue with the ref because, he immediately gets stabbed.
No, but me as the coach on the sideline, I'm going to fucking run out on the field and yell at the ref.
Quick way to get ejected. I love that parkour seems to be like a part of the Fedaiken training.
Except it's not really parkour. It's more just like, I'm going to roll around in the sand.
Yeah, but it's like, it's so funny. I mean, it's wonderful moves. It looks awesome.
Sure.
But it's just so funny. They're just like doing the most.
They are super fucking extra about it.
And it's like, not like they can see him. They can't see him in this dust storm. So he's purely doing this for his own enjoyment.
Stab. Wee, wee, wee.
Exactly. It reminded me of those videos. And I don't know the creator, but you're going to be able to tell me the creator of this. The Zelda, like the Legend of Zelda playthroughs where the animation where he's just doing the fast somersault rolls.
Yeah. Terminal montage.
Yes. That's it.
Yeah. The best ones are when he has Fox McCloud and it's just the "Hiya!" from fucking Melee.
Those are so good. Yeah, but all the Zelda ones.
Or the super religious Kirby.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, and the Zelda ones, Link's always just like fast, like somersault rolling away.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure he uses just the audio clip of Young Link from Ocarina of Time, because there was so you don't play video games, but basically there was tech in that game where walking backwards or strafe jumping was faster than walking forward animation. So yeah. Speedrunners would, you know, utilize a combination of those two for like movement across large spaces and everything. But whenever you do the strafe jumping, there's, you know, Young Link is always doing like a hut, 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 hut. So yeah. Yeah.
It's so funny. So Raban is listening to all this radio chatter. Yeah. He's very confused. He's got his Mark Wahlberg from The Happening face on.
I will say he's definitely moved from like super rage and angry to like starting to show like a little bit of elements of like uncertainty and fear mm-hmm. in this moment, which yeah. like fair, but also this dust cloud is your fault.
Yeah.
So, oh no, it's the consequences of my actions.
And the parkouring does not stop here. We get some quick sequences of other Fremen doing, again, the most and taking out a bunch of goons.
Well, one of the goons is directly in front of Rabin as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he gets his fucking, like, throat cut, and then he just, like, falls, and Rabin's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, we get the cutthroat. We get, like, a rear attack kind of thing.
It's another, like, rear, like, spider monkey jump and stab and then like roll yeah. off doing the most kind of thing.
It's very like I'm gonna get the discipline wrong, but stuff you would see in like MMA fights, like a Brazilian jiu-jitsu takedowns or Muay Thai or something like that.
I don't know that world, but that I'm gonna just assume that you're wrong,
that I'm wrong
on like the discipline.
You're gonna look at me and you're gonna tell me that I'm wrong?
Yeah.
She came down in a bubble, dog. Her sister was a witch. Yeah, I'm probably wrong on the discipline, but one of those that typically goes into MMA fighting style.
Sure.
It looks like this.
In my notes, it's just spider monkey stab time.
Sure. Yeah. So we finally get something kind of cool here. So after all these attacks, really during all these attacks, Raban unfurls his whip.
Yeah.
And I believe this is the first time we've seen the whip earlier. We saw it last week. But it was just on his belt.
Yeah, we saw the whip in part one as well.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember if he used it at all in the attack on Arakeen, and I don't think he did.
No.
Because I think he was just one hand slashing the most.
Yep.
Those
captured
soldiers that were just like handcuffed and like just waiting for him to cut their heads off.
Yeah. So I want to spend a little bit of time talking about this whip.
Okay.
So this is described as an ink vine whip. And this is not something we've ever talked about on the show before. Not directly anyways. I had to reach way back in the memory banks to one of the season one episodes where we got introduced to Gurney Halleck.
Yeah. I think I know where you're going with this, with like the conversation that we had about how Gurney was rescued from the Harkonnen fighting mm-hmm. pits and everything because like he tried to kill the Harkonnens after they like raped and murdered his sister and all
yeah.
that shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was like episode 20, maybe.
It was early on. Yeah. Yeah.
It was when Paul and Gurney were sparring.
Mm-hmm. Canonically, this could be considered the exact same whip that gave Gurney Halleck his scar and made him into the rolling ugly man that he is described to be. We don't get this in the movie. We get a very handsome Josh Brolin playing Gurney.
Everyone was ugly, but Gurney was far and among the ugliest amongst them.
Yeah.
So and far and away, the ugliest amongst them. Frank Herbert was such an asshole about Gurney, dude.
Well, part of what made him so so ugly, I guess is the only way to say it, is this big scar across his face. And that scar has a like beet red hue to it.
Yeah.
Because it was inflicted by an ink vine whip.
Specifically, so he almost had like a port wine stain kind of colored scar
yeah.
or whatever.
Yeah. And specifically, it was this ink vine whip that gave it to him. So the scar that he has on his face was canonically given to him by Raban. We're going to call it different levels of canon. I believe that comes from the encyclopedia.
Yeah.
So not core canon, but encyclopedia canon says that.
Sure.
Ink vine is a creeping vine-like plant, native to Gedi Prime and frequently used as a whip in the slave pens of House Harkonnen. Victims were marked by the beet-colored tattoos that caused residual pain for many years. Gurney Halleck bore the inkvine scar on his cheek as a consequence of his attack on Raban while a slave on Gedi Prime. So that came from the encyclopedia. So yeah, this is, you know, we're getting to see this this quick, very quick shot of something that has a lot of lore within the story. And I'm not sure what good it's going to do here.
No, because Rabin's about to turn tail and run away like a little bitch. Yeah. Because out from the dust cloud, we start hearing Muad'Dib, Muad'Dib,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Muad'Dib, and more Fremen all start approaching. Front yeah. and center is a hooded Fremen.
Mm-hmm. Confident.
Just walking with all the bravado. And it's none other than our good dear friend, Muad'Dib.
Exactly. Yep. So this really illustrates a character trait of Raban that we've not really talked about too much.
By design, because I think we wanted to save it for this.
Sure. He is a little chicken shit.
Yeah, no, he puts on airs of being like a complete and, you know, total badass. But like mm-hmm. when push comes to shove.
Yeah.
He's a little bitch.
And we kind of see moments of that or evidence of that throughout the movies. Like he is only using force when he has a clear power dynamic. Or clear, like, the upper hand in the power dynamic.
Yeah, like, with the Solito console stuff. Like, all of his own men are terrified of him and everything.
Yeah.
So he knows that he's, like, immediately got the upper hand. But in this situation where he's, you know, stuck in a dust cloud and mm-hmm. he's seemingly alone because fucking he has the most inept
yeah.
guards with him and everything. Right. Like, yeah, no, he's terrified. So what does he do?
Just tuck tails and runs.
Yeah. Gets the fuck out of there.
Yep. And we see Paul's face as he's approaching, very like stoic, just focused, no real emotion showing.
Eyes on the prize, motherfucker.
Yeah. And it's getting illuminated by the explosions that are happening around and it's causing the dust to light up. And for the rest of the minute, we see just kind of more generic action shots. You know, laser guns are being fired. Fremen are going down. Harkonnens are going down.
We got the you know, profile tracking shot as, you know, Rabin's mm-hmm. running away and everything.
Yeah.
Do see some missiles in addition to the laser guns because we mm-hmm. see a couple ornithopters just like immediately, you know, get blown up as they're trying to leave and
yeah.
you know, crash and fire explosions behind Rabin and everything.
Yep. It makes sense to note that there are no shields on the ornithopters because they are in the open desert and that would attract a worm. So they are at least keeping that part of shield technology in canon, movie canon.
So far. We'll get there.
Yeah.
But yeah, Rabin barely makes it to his Orny Bee and, you know, finishes a retreat. And the last, you know, couple seconds of the minute is, you know, Rabin, you know, just kind of looking down on all of his men getting slaughtered as he is making his way to safety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because to him, like we talked about, you know, they're all useless. Yep. Who gives a shit?
He does not care about his men at all. And we do get, so as he's, as they're lifting off, we do get the theme playing in the background. So we get the all day cookie dough theme, or at least part of that song.
We get just general horn, just blahs and stuff.
I thought I heard
it's not the, all day cookie dough.
I thought I heard the chant.
There may be chanting, but it's not all day cookie dough.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So Paul, like they made quick work of this Harkonnen contingency that was approaching the rocks. Real quick work.
Just got to fucking deal with the goons.
Yep.
And Paul says no goons in my desert. No gooners.
This is a no gooning zone. All right. Well, take us out before we start making more bad jokes.
All righty. Well, the Dune Minute is online in a few different places. You can find us on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us that way. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode of the Dune Minute podcast. See you.
See ya.